Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Well, a very good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the programme. Clem, as I say, filling in for Caoimhe this week on the programme. And we've got an interesting lineup for you today, because later we'll be speaking with Senior Assistant Fire Officer, Kildare Fire Service, Chanel Ryan, namesake, no relation, I might add, but it being Fire Safety Week and very, very important. We're also coming up to that Halloween, whisper it. The bloody crackers are off already, the bangers, sending every dog and cat in the neighbourhood scurrying. Also on the programme this morning, author, historian, travel writer Owen Corry. And if anyone has never read Owen Corry's history book of Kildare GAA, I advise you to get it. It's huge altogether. Owen is going to be talking about St Bridget's legacy abroad. And he's going to be doing that in a talk at Kilcullen Town Hall at 10 a.m. on Saturday. So we won't give you the whole full talk, but we'll talk about various matters. And maybe with Luton Airport on fire this morning, Owen, being a travel writer and expert on air travel around the world, he'll have a view on that as well. Also, a producer, screenwriter and script editor from Nace. His first film will shine a spotlight on ageing and domestic abuse, and it's having its North American premiere at the opening Newport Beach Film Festival. But first, 2 days ago, we discussed the whole area of menopause to raise awareness for others, including Clem and most of my male cohorts, because I think it's fair enough to say that men in general, we don't understand what the menopause is about. And it's often the butt of jokes. It's often used, you know, she's menopausal, like that. There have been tens of thousands of spouses, boyfriends, partners and everything over the years have wondered, what was that transformation that's happening to the love of my life that sees her mainly, nearly psychotic in some cases, you know, out for blood, war, and just generally unwell with conditions ranging from severe depression, huge discomfort, etc., etc. You know, ultimately, we boys, we have it easy. At the end of the day, we don't get the menopause, thankfully. We don't suffer periods, thankfully, given the inconvenience that it can cause. And I don't know what else women have that we don't have either. Many people might say, well, we don't have the wisdom. We don't have the patience of women. And sure, we all know the old saying, you know, that when a man has a cold, oh, he's got to go to bed, can't talk to anyone. I'm feeling terrible altogether. Whereas women scorn that because such is their pain threshold, which I'm sure is to do with their physiology as well. Anyway, if you'd feel so inclined, you can get us messages on this topic and other topics as well. 0833 97 97 97. Now, when we were discussing this with the coach, a menopause coach, I never knew there was such a thing, but there is, and she was very articulate the other day. Christine Lane was with us, and she runs the website mojo.ie, M-O-G-A-O, if you want to find out more about the service she'd give. But very kindly, we were to speak to my next guest, Catherine, and that's all we'll tell you, because she's very bravely offered to share her experience. We were to speak to her yesterday, but, you know, these all things happen on the technical end. So happily, she's joining us today. Catherine, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Clem. How are you today?
I'm very good, because I'm a man and I don't have to suffer with all these menopause and periods.
That was lovely what you just said there. And I wouldn't expect a man to know.
Would you not?
No, a woman doesn't even know what's happening to her. I didn't even know what was happening to me. I thought I had cancer. I thought I had Alzheimer's. You know, and I do often say, if Carlsberg did menopause, what would it be like?
I tell you what. Well, let me... I love your attitude to that. Let me just say this, because Gee WhatsApp does yesterday on the programme, and I said I'd come back to the message when we'd have you today.
Yeah.
And Gee said, hi, just to say that when we are in perimenopause, because the peri was a new one to me, or menopause, it's a phase in a woman's life where the hormones estrogen and progesterone leave our bodies. The only way to replace these hormones are body identical HRT, or hormone replacement therapy. We never go through our end menopause, she says. it with us for the rest of our lives. Ah, oh, Jesus, no.
She's 100% right. And 100% right.
And she says, of course, there are other remedies available, but HRT is scientifically proven. Fact.
Yes.
Hope all women get it during this phase. It's not a condition. It's a part of a woman's life. They get just all the other phases as well. Thanks, Chief, for that. I thought, Catherine, that women get over this after a couple of years and then they get sex mad because they've no...
Did you? I'm still waiting to get sex mad.
Why?
And it's 13 years since I started my journey.
Because you don't have to worry about pregnancies and whatever.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And, you know, at the end of the day, wouldn't we all love to be sex mad?
Listen, I'm going to confession after this interview now.
You may.
I mean, I don't understand that word that you're talking about at all. Now,
yes.
Catherine, I want to take you back to your own experience of it.
Okay.
So, off you go.
Right, I just want to say I'm not as articulate as that lovely Christine that spoke.
You are?
And the reason I'm ringing is to help other people, and I'm speaking from the heart.
That's very kind of you.
My experience, I was suicidal, and I had nobody to help me. So this is why I'm here. So my voice is shaking. I do my best. I timed myself reading this out, and it takes me 30 minutes. So I don't want to bore you with all that. So I'm going to hit a few points.
Exactly.
And if you want to ask me any questions, feel free. And if any of your listeners want to contact me, you can give them my number privately and I will talk to anybody. I will help anybody.
That's very kind of you. I'm struck by your mention of the word suicidal. People might think we're being a bit flippant about it. We're not being a bit flippant at all
absolutely
about this.
Not.
Because
it's
such a serious condition. Yes. So, Catherine, when and what age were you when you noticed strange things happening to you and what strange things were happening?
Right. I was 45 and it was 13 years ago. And the first thing I noticed was hot flushes. And I was delighted with myself. This is great now. I won't have to worry about contraception or anything. And I'm always cold. So this is lovely. I'm going to be warm now for the winter. Right?
Yeah.
And my opinion of menopause was hot flushes, weight gain, fluctuating periods, and then you get over it all. And you're happy-go-lucky. And as you said yourself, sex mad, hopefully.
Yeah, right. You said it.
Yeah, okay. So that was my limited knowledge. And now 13 years later, why do I know so much more? So all I can do is tell you my symptoms.
Right, go ahead.
And I'll read them out very quickly. I don't want to be here, I don't want to take up your time.
That's okay,
what I mean.
Please go ahead.
Stop me at any time.
Don't worry about
it. Right, yeah. So I had hot flushes, night sweats, anxiety, stress, feeling overwhelmed, not able to cope with things that I would do in my stride a few years ago. Fear of everything, memory loss, meeting people, not able to remember their name, not able to remember my own name, not able to remember alarm codes, not able to find my keys, confidence shattered, felt like a teenager, blushing again, embarrassed, not wanting to go anywhere, suffered from dry eyes that got so bad, it developed into glaucoma. I had sore joints, fatigue, loss of libido. I had bloating, digestive issues, palpitations, weight gain, burning tongue, changes in body odour, migraine getting worse, pain in the left side down into my groin and lower back, which I learned later was my left ovary. I had heavy blood loss. I had anemia. I lost my confidence in driving, especially at night and long journeys. I would have palpitations and I would panic. That's my symptoms.
My good God. My good God.
Yes.
And how long did those symptoms last before we discussed the impact that they had in your life?
I needed a hysterectomy, right? So I was trying to get a hysterectomy and it took 7 years. From the first day I went to my GP and asked to be referred to a gynaecologist, it took 7 years. And I was told in one hospital that I was too young to have a hysterectomy, that I couldn't be going through the change, it was all in my head. I went to a different hospital then, because I live in Kildare, I have access to different hospitals. I went to a different hospital in a different county. I was told I was too old. There was no point in having a hysterectomy, sure. I was nearly over it at this stage. So that's what happened. I spent in and out of hospital, in and out of A&E, sitting there 5, 6, 7 hours with chronic blood loss.
And did you have the hysterectomy?
After 7 years, eventually, somebody listened to me. After them telling me that I didn't know, like, the severity of a hysterectomy and that, you know, it's so severe and we don't do it willy-nilly and you'll never cope with it. And for God's sake, I was coping with labour every day of my life.
And tell me about that hysterectomy as I understand it. And I have some understanding of that, which I don't really have the menopause other than what I read and hear from women like yourself. Having had the hysterectomy, your womb is removed, your ovaries are removed. What difference did that make to you physiologically, psychologically, in the immediate aftermath?
Okay, I'll just tell you first that I wasn't given any information. I was wheeled down in a wheelchair to the theatre, and outside the theatre door, the surgeon came to me, a lady surgeon, and she said, "Catherine, what are we going to do about your ovaries?" And I said, "What do you mean about my ovaries?" Well, she said, "Am I going to take them or leave them?" And I said, "So why would you want to take them?" "Oh," she said, "well, I'm taking your tubes, your womb and your cervix." And I said, "Are you? Why?" "Oh," she said, "as a precaution." And I said, "What about my ovaries?" "Well, we can always go in at a later stage and take them." So the penny dropped that she thought I had cancer. So I said to her, "Right," I said, "I'm after having 3 surgeries or 4 this year already, investigations in 2 different hospitals. And 3 different doctors, and nobody diagnosed that I needed a hysterectomy." So I said, "When I come out of this hospital, I am never coming back again. So when you go in there, you take what has to be taken and stitch me up and let me go home, because that's me."
Right. So, and what did you notice in terms of your symptoms following the hysterectomy?
Before the hysterectomy, I had all my menopausal symptoms. After the hysterectomy, I felt great because the pain was gone. I felt brilliant. I was then, it was December, and I came home the day before Christmas Eve. And I came home and I was so happy, looking forward to Christmas with my family, my children. I was pain-free. I could get over that stage in my life, that menopause was gone. Everything that connected me to being, you know, to having children and all, that I was at a different stage of my life and this was time for me now. And I was at home, I'd say, about 4 weeks, maybe less. I can't really remember. And the hot flushes got chronic, that during the night I'd have to get out of the bed, I'd have to wring out my nightdress, it was so wet. I'd have to get into the shower, cold shower. I'd get back into bed then and I'd throw all the clothes off the bed. And after an hour I might fall back asleep. And then I'd wake up shivering, which are night sweats.
Yeah, pardon my ignorance now on this, but I thought, notwithstanding what G said about it being that menopause is a lifetime and what you've said yourself, I thought that night sweats are peculiar only to the menopause period until you pass a certain chronological state or a certain age, and then the night sweats stop.
That's what I thought too.
But they don't.
And I thought that the surgeon, who is a consultant gynaecologist, who would have been in her 60s, absolutely fantastic surgeon. I thought, like, she would know about menopause. She knew nothing about menopause. She let me leave the hospital with no HRT, nothing. And I was due back for my 6-week check. And I still had no HRT. And I had all these symptoms, like, and cold showers during the night and... And I started to suffer anxiety and stress again, really bad. I couldn't be in the house. I felt like I was going mad. I had to get outside. I couldn't be, like I was closed in. I remember one day my daughter was coming to collect me and we were going somewhere. And she'd asked me, I had a bag of stuff to bring for her. "Bring them out, Ma, I want them." So I said, okay, and she was late. And I was at the gate with this bag, which was very heavy. And I could not stand at the gate. I just had to keep walking.
Why?
And
why?
Even though I had to get away, there was something psychological in my head.
Right.
Was telling me I had to get away. And I was running away from myself, I suppose.
And where did you where did you go, Catherine?
Oh, I just went down the road to meet my daughter. Like, I couldn't stand still.
Okay.
So she stopped and collected
me. Can
then.
I come back to the HRT a minute? Because I thought that you don't necessarily get HRT automatically. That, first of all, there might be a look at how you're coping. I'm talking about not having had a hysterectomy.
Yes. Yes.
And is it a case that HRT doesn't suit everyone and that there were possible question marks over people being on it too long as well?
Yes, I will clarify that. My first, when I got my hot flushes, my first port of call was the health shop. And I stocked up on herbal stuff and that worked for about 6 months. Sage is very good if anybody's listening that has hot flushes. Sage actually helps the hot flushes. Worked really well for about 6 months. Then it's like my body came too used to it. Then I tried acupuncture and other Chinese mixes and medications and reflexology and massage, and everything worked for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it all stopped working. So I'm after losing my train of thought. Sorry, what else?
No,
did
that's
you ask
okay.
Me?
I'm just saying about HRT.
Suit everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't. But what I'm trying, you asked me something about what the lady said yesterday.
Did you? Oh, yeah, about it going through, that it's not something that starts on one time and ends another time, that it's a long term.
Yeah.
It's going through your whole life. And that, and she mentioned HRT is the panacea, or is it?
Yes. Right. So if you have depression, you have a chemical imbalance in your brain. So the only thing that's going to make that better is if you replace what's missing, like the chemicals.
Right.
Right? So if you have all your ovaries taken out, your cervix, your womb, your tubes, to make it understandable, Christine said you're at the top of the slide and you slip down slowly, slowly, slowly as you get older, going into menopause.
Right.
So I was at the top of the slide and it's like I was pushed off it and I dropped down to the bottom, like I fell off a cliff, because everything was sort of ripped down me, which it's not the natural way to go.
Yeah.
So, does that make sense to you, Clem?
It does. And you see, when someone says, does that make sense to me, it would never be possible for me to say to someone like you, Catherine, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Because I'm not the one going through these physiological and psychological changes.
Yeah.
So therefore, I cannot comment other than what I hear from you, what I've heard other women talk about, and the listener who says now, Clem, thanks so much for talking about the menopause. You could do a whole month in it. We women go through hell.
Yes.
My God.
There was a show on Joe Duffy 2 years ago.
Who's he? Go on.
I'm only
teasing you.
And
go
I
on.
Wasn't listening to him. I was in Spain at the time.
I hope not. Okay,
yeah,
very.
No. My daughter was actually having surgery for endometriosis, and
no,
I was in
go
Spain.
On. Stay with
and
this idea it, of women yes. going through hell.
Yes, women going through hell. Right. Let me see now. I have notes. Right. So I went to my doctor numerous times, and all I was ever offered was antidepressants. I was told that, oh, it's to change your life, and you know, your periods are going to get heavy before they get weak, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the only thing my doctor was worried about was I had heart palpitations. So I was sent to the heart clinic in Nace Hospital. And the first thing the heart surgeon said to me when he seen me, do you mind me asking you your age? And I told him whatever age I was then, probably 47 or 8. And he said, are you going through menopause? I said, I am. And he said, I'll just do a quick checkup on you. And he did, took 5 or 10 minutes, and he said, I wish to God GPs would stop sending menopausal women to me.
Why?
He said, everybody knows that fluctuating hormones cause palpitations. It's a natural symptom of menopause. He said, my clinic is chock-a-block with real heart patients who need bypasses and stents. And GPs are sending me by the week, like maybe 10 or 12 menopausal women.
Well, hold that thought for GPs for the minute, because another listener, Dee, has just said, hi, Clem and Catherine. My consultant prescribed HRT after my hysterectomy, but when I needed a follow-up prescription, my doctor refused to give it to me because he didn't believe in it.
Happens all the time. All the time,
does it?
All the time. And, like, I have a medical card, right?
Yeah.
But I can't access any of that. I have to pay €200 to see a menopause consultant. And every time I need a new prescription, and they review it every 3 months, I have to pay €90. And now that's until they get the balance right. So they start you off on 25, a patch of 25 grams. And then it goes up in 25s after that. And the highest dose is 100. So I was one of those people that had to keep going. I think, I could be wrong, don't quote me, that 100 is the highest. I could be wrong. But 100 is where I had to go to get relief from what I had.
0833 97 97 97. If any other woman wants to offer us views there on the WhatsApp, we won't use your names. Don't worry about that. 0833 97 97 97. Or you can even chat to Hannah on the phone on 045 901 490 or 898 999. I want to go back briefly. Jesus, I'm taken aback by
Sorry, Clem. Yes? I just forgot to mention something. Can I just get it in before we go back?
Yeah.
Right. When my surgeon did my hysterectomy, the next day she came to my bedside and she said to me, I had been complaining of this pain in my left side, and I went to the comb and I was told there was nothing wrong with me, that must be my bowel, and that I'd have to go back to my GP and get referred to someone who deals with bowels or bowels. So my surgeon then told me that it took her double the amount of time to remove my womb and my ovaries because I was covered in endometriosis. So that's what was causing my pain.
Down the
left side.
Endometriosis
is another condition that I've had from puberty, but I was never diagnosed with and I never knew I had it. And my daughter has it now because we're all more aware of it.
And
it causes infertility. It causes severe period pain, like labour. It's like being in labour every month. And you have very, very, well, I had, maybe not everyone, very, very heavy blood loss every month.
Catherine, when you were going through all of this, and I'll ask you about your current condition in a minute, were you like a lunatic?
Absolute lunatic. An header ball. I'll tell you, Clem, I'll tell you about me. Normally, I'm organised, I'm funny, I have a great sense of humour,
I'm
full of energy, I love my children, my grandchildren, my partner, I'm so positive, life is brilliant. And all of a sudden, I turned into this moaner that was like going around like that didn't know what a smile was, with a long face on me. And I felt that I was moaning about my knees, my head. If it wasn't my arse, it was my elbow.
It was a lot more than your arse and your elbow, I'll tell you, by the sounds of it.
I'm telling you, every day there was something else wrong with me. But what kept me going was my three wonderful, wonderful adult children and my wonderful, wonderful partner. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have kept going because they believed in me. And they said, Mammy, this is not you. You're not like this.
Yeah.
You're not a negative person. This is just something you're going through. But I kept blaming myself. What's wrong with me? Have I Alzheimer's? Am I getting cancer? Have I a tumour? What is going on with me? Why can't I remember the alarm codes? And something very interesting I have to tell you here. Right, I had a very, very good job and I was on a really good salary. I worked as a retail manager for a large international retailer and my contract was 45 hours a week. And all of those 45 hours were I was standing or walking. I got an hour for my lunch. And if I was lucky, I might get a 15-minute break if there was enough staff in the morning.
Right.
Now, the 45 hours ran to 50, 55 most weeks, but I wasn't paid for the extra 10 hours because I was on a salary. The fact that I was very good at my job, if I say so myself, because I have excellent customer service skills and I treat people as humans, not as machines, So I was often moved from store to store in different counties, adding up to even a longer day. I could have to drive to Carlow and then drive from Carlow back at the end of a 10 or 11 hour shift and then be up again the next morning to be in for whatever time the next shift starts.
Irrespective of condition.
Yeah.
How are you? How are you now?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And are you on HRT now?
I am, and it took me about 2 years to get it balanced.
Right.
And in those years, I was very down. And I didn't know, is this depression? Is this a symptom of the menopause? Is this because I'm fatigued and I'm overtired and I can't do what I used to do? And my stomach was all bloated. I had a whole lot of other issues with gas and acid and all that kind of thing. And I just want to just go back to the thing about the job. Can I do that?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So at the height of my perimenopause, I was working as a manager, responsible for 50 employees. Because it was a smaller store, I would have to either open it in the morning or close it in the evening. So if I opened it in the morning, I went in on my own. I turned off the alarm, let the cleaners in, took all the money out of the safe, put it in all the tills, let the staff in when they came. Or if it was an evening shift, I put all the money away in the safe, locked it up and set the alarm and let myself out, all by myself. Perfectly capable. Not a bother me. Confident as anything. When this perimenopause came to attack my brain, that's the only way I can describe it. I'll give you a laugh. I couldn't remember my name. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I set off that alarm maybe 3 mornings a week. And my store manager was down on me like a ton of bricks. Head office were down on me. I was like I was a boulder. They were being slapped on the wrist because of brain fog. I was made to feel inferior to the other managers who were maybe 10 years younger than me, sniggering and laughing behind my back because I was so stupid. You know, and then I was telling myself I'm stupid because I didn't know what else it was. And one morning, I was in on the 7 o'clock shift and I went to open the safe. I didn't set off the alarm that morning. That was a good day. So I went to open the safe and the safe, I couldn't open. No matter what I did, it wouldn't open. So the store manager wasn't due until 8 o'clock, but all the money was supposed to be in the till for 8 o'clock. So I rang him and told him and he tutted at me down the phone and he came in then with an attitude and the body language said, not you again sort of thing. And he opened the safe for me. So I ran around in a panic trying to get all the money in the till before all the staff arrived. And then I said to him, would you mind coming into the cash office and just show me what I'm doing wrong? And he said, of course, yeah. So I went in and I said, right, now watch me. So I did step 1, 2, 3, 4. And I tried to open it and tried to open it and it wouldn't open. And I said to him, like, what am I doing wrong? And he said, are you okay? I said, yeah. Why? He said, what about step 5, 6, 7 and 8? And I said, what? He said, 5, 6, 7 and 8. And he looked at me like a 10 heads. And I just bursted out crying. I never knew there was a 5, 6, 7 and 8. I don't know where that went. It went out my brain.
Okay. I think you've conveyed wonderfully and so articulately. I have all the symptoms that Catherine has. I'm 51. Says a listener, which I'll just get the rest of that message up there now in a minute if it comes up for me.
And
this listener says, hi Clem, I've all the symptoms that Catherine has. I'm 51 and I had a slight ophiorectomy. I wondered, did she mean hysterectomy at 39?
It could be her ovaries.
Ophiorectomy. Yeah. That's a new term to me. And that put me into menopause. I haven't had a period in almost 10 years. No doctor would listen to my symptoms. I'm quite amazed at this kind of thing I've done. Like Catherine, I would be a very organised person, but not anymore. Today my energy levels are on the floor and I think some days I've dementia. It's horrible to be feeling like this, she says.
What's her name?
I won't give her name out in air.
Oh, no, okay? Sorry. Well, yeah. I just want to address her and say, hang in there. Get yourself HRT.
Yeah.
Ring me. I'll give you a list. I'll find out where you live. I'll tell you who's your closest. You'll have to pay €200. But by God, it'll be worth it. You'll get your life back.
Well, Catherine...
And that's all I can say to you.
On that happy note, I think that your tale of the destruction that it caused psychologically and physiologically will be so reassuring for many women who are in this position and can't talk or feel they can't talk to anyone. But you can reach out, there's help there.
The Irish Menopause Society on Facebook is your first stop.
Right.
Right? It was set up by two brilliant women who went through, fantastic women. One of them had similar symptoms to me. The other one, her best friend, committed suicide. And they came together and set up this page. And it started out with maybe 10 members. There's thousands of members on the page
now. So what's it called again?
It's the Irish Menopause Society. I think it's Society. It's Irish Menopause. Google it, it'll come up, you know?
Okay.
But there's one thing I want to say to you about the suicide thing, because I didn't hit on that. Did I? Did I tell you about the suicide?
No.
No, right. So I'm going to tell you that before I go, right? And then I'm gone. Out of your hair. And I let you move on to somebody that might be more interesting.
Go on, no, there'd be nobody more interesting than this.
No, like, every time I went to my GP, he told me I was depressed. And the more he told me, the more determined I was that I'm not depressed and I'm not taking antidepressants. And I went everywhere and I ended up in hospital and everything. And in the end, I gave in because no one listened and I took antidepressants. And my daughter said, look, Ma, don't worry about it. These are going to take 3 or 4 weeks to work. And in that 3 or 4 weeks, I'm here. I got your back. I'm going to come and stay with you. She was 28 years of age. She had a head on her shoulders like a 90-year-old woman. She's so clever. And she spent every night in the bed with me, making sure that I was safe, because she could read me like a book. And I was afraid to read the symptoms of or the side effects of taking antidepressants, because I knew I wouldn't take them, because I'm totally anti-medication. I wouldn't even take a paracetamol. But one morning she woke up and I wasn't in the bed. And she came running down to the kitchen and I was coming in the back door. And she said, where were you, Ma? I said, I was out in the shed. And she said, what were you doing out there? I said, I was looking for a rope. She said, what for? I said, to hang myself, because I said, I can't live like this anymore. And that's where I was. I couldn't live like this anymore. My family loved me. My children loved me. I loved my partner. He loved me. I had everything I needed. But I couldn't live like this anymore.
Because
I didn't know who I was. But anyway, she got me help. She brought me to a hospital and signed in that I was suicidal. We were left 6 hours sitting on a hard chair, no one seen us, and in the end we came home, we never got a phone call, no one followed it up to check whether I was alive or dead, didn't need any more help.
Catherine, it's been truly, truly enlightening for me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for many men in particular, but also for many, many women out there, your story. But what's most uplifting of all, and it says, thank you, KFM, for having an open discussion on the menopause. I just wish I was able to listen to the entire discussion. Bottom line for me, HRT made a big difference to me, my physical and mental well-being. My life as a whole and those around me. Brain fog, memory issues, lack of self-confidence, feeling stupid, poor sleep due to frequent trips to the bathroom, pains in my ankles are just some of my symptoms. I also have to see a menopause specialist as my doctor's knowledge is limited. Don't forget, HRT also helps to protect my heart and bones, which is almost important to me. And another caller says, I was refused HRT 2 weeks ago because I'm almost 10 years without a period. Huh.
You can still take HRT if you're 10 years without a period. Now, I'm not a doctor,
right,
but I have heard that lady on the Irish Menopause Society, Sally Ann Brady, if you go into the Irish Menopause Society and search about that, there's a window that I think it's up to 10 years,
right,
that you can go on HRT. And there's women in their 70s and 80s that are still suffering with vaginal dryness and incontinence and everything because they never got HRT. And HRT protects your brain from Alzheimer's.
Now, Catherine, I tell you, you have been a star.
Thank you very much,
and
Glenn.
I would look forward to talking to you. I'm going to be on this programme for a couple, other than the next, this week I will, then for 2 weeks, Cuí will be here, then I'll be on it for a couple of months. I know we're going to have you back, because I think what you have in telling your story today, and the most reassuring thing for me is the devastation and desolation that you described when at the lowest point in your journey through the menopause. Yeah. That you're now so bright and bubbly and positive and well, with a great, great aspect on life. And that has to be inspirational and of such help to so many women going through it. But hello, all men out there. And I address all of us. Hopefully, we now have a better understanding about what our wives, our partners, our girlfriends, regardless, irrespective of the age, might be going through. So a little more understanding, more support, more tolerance of what's going on, and be there for them as well. I am so thankful I'm a man and not
Absolutely.
A woman
after, I'm
what
telling you,
after what you've described, Catherine. Mm. Listen, I've got to move
Sorry,
on.
Clem, can I say one final thing?
Yeah.
One, and I'm gone, right? Depression, I didn't understand it till it happened to me. Depression affected me that I couldn't leave the house. My sister died in September 2023, and I was not able to get out of bed to go to her funeral. Now, you know the person I am today. I have always been this kind of person. I would have been down at her wake. I would have been making tea. I would have been meeting people. I would have been helping to put on her makeup, put on her best clothes, get the nicest flowers I could find and do displays. And I'd be up doing the eulogy and everything. And I was lying in the bed, not able to get out of it. I couldn't attend her funeral. And that was the lowest point, I have to say. I'll never get that time back. And that was denied to me because nobody listened. Nobody listened. GPs don't listen. There's such a simple way to fix this. If nurses were trained, that you could go and talk to a nurse and tell them what's wrong, the nurse can jump into the doctor, this woman needs,
yes,
whatever.
And maybe, I don't want to rain on male doctors or whatever else.
No.
But maybe it's a case that women would be more empathetic because they can share the experiences. But also, of course, it does highlight the issue of more and more training needed in this particular
Absolutely.
Area. Catherine?
Yes. Thank you so much, Clem. And as I say, they can make it simple.
Okay.
It's like the ad, it's simple. It doesn't
right.
have to be that hard.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you, Clem. Take care and God bless. And anyone that needs to contact me, I'm available at any time of the day or night. If anybody needs to
chat. If anyone wants to, can give a ring in here to Hannah on 045 901 490 or 045 898 999. And we'll give you Catherine's number if you'd like to talk to her. But above all, I think the vast majority of people listening today are now better informed and have a better understanding. Thanks to you, Catherine. Have a great
day. Glad to be able to help. Thank you very much.
The Irish Menopause Society, folks, on Facebook, and we'll do it all again. A good old ELO. Watching them on some of the retrospective channels lately and seeing what they look like. Never they did, but they're very catchy songs anyway. And that one, It's a Living Thing. Now, moving along, it's also Fire Safety Week. And, of course, the mention of Halloween and the firecrackers and everything else, but also on a more serious note at Halloween, it's every year there are accidents and incidents with costumes going on fire, and then there's the problem of bonfires, etc., etc., etc. The Senior Assistant Fire Officer at Kildare Fire Service is Chanel Ryan. Good morning, Chanel, or good afternoon, Chanel.
Good afternoon, Glenn. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for joining us. Fire Safety Week. We know that there's people love candles, they love all sorts of scented yolks, they don't clean their chimneys, they're making fires, and all the issues that bring for yourself. Tell me a little about what's happening this Fire Safety Week.
Yeah, so Fire Safety Week started there on Monday jointly with Northern Ireland Fire Service. So our theme this year is Safer Together. So what that means is just for everyone to look out for themselves and their neighbours and their vulnerable and elderly neighbours. Smoke alarms is the key, and we're probably blue in the face saying this, but you know, smoke alarms, smoke alarms, smoke alarms. You need to have them in your home. You need to test them. You need to make sure that they're working, because if you don't have early detection, a fire will go unnoticed and more than likely will, if you're asleep, put you into a deeper sleep and you never wake up. So obviously we don't want that. We don't want any fire deaths in the county and or in the country for that matter. And, you know, smoke alarms are going to be the key to that. So we're always emphasising that message. In a way, from Kildare perspective, we have our own Facebook page in Kildare Fire Service, and we have lots of tips and videos and things up on that. And we also have an open day taking place this Saturday in Athy Fire Station, and we'd encourage people to come along and have a look at some of our demonstrations and get a bit of information about home fire safety and that kind of thing as well.
All right. Now, we've often had Ben here on the station in the past, and indeed predecessors as Chief Fire Safety Officer, now with Kildare County Council as well. You mentioned fire alarms, which many people, smoke alarms, they're in the ceiling, they forget about them, they never look up or they never check the battery, which should happen regularly.
Yeah.
What about the old the fireplace and chimneys?
Yeah, look, we would encourage people to clean their chimney at least twice a year, maybe more, depending on how often you use it. It's a very preventable fire, and it's also, unfortunately, a fire that can easily spread. It can go, and if your flue gets cracked, it can go into your roof space, and an attic space, and set fire probably to your roof. So, again, emphasising the importance of that. If you do have an open fire, make sure that you have spark guards in front of it, that you're constantly, keeping an eye on that and making sure that children aren't close by, and, you know, doing your last thing at night routine, so making sure when you're going to bed that you ensure your spark guards in front of the fire, that you extinguish any candles or any cigarettes or anything like that, making sure that they're safe. Closing all doors at night, again, is very important.
No, I was going to ask you about that point, because it nearly seems counterintuitive, but apparently it is very important to close all doors.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, we've been...
Why?
Just because it would contain a fire if anything ever happened. It also contains smoke. So if you would imagine if your sitting room, for example, went on fire, if you closed the door to that sitting room, it's going to contain the fire behind that door and give you that precious time to get out of your house. Your smoke alarm should be working perfectly, so it should give you that early warning. So we'll never have a situation, hopefully, where you'll ever get trapped in your own home if you have early detection. Mm. It also will prevent a lot of damage to your home. You know, smoke is, you know, it's like water. It will just go everywhere. So if you can contain that and keep it behind a closed door, you're minimising the damage, you're minimising the risk, and giving yourself a great chance to be able to get out if it ever did happen.
Okay. We know about the high cost of electricity and everything else, and there was the suggestion, I thought somewhat crazy, of putting washing machines on and other stuff on overnight.
Mm-hmm.
That and the old phone chargers or anything plugged in overnight, what's your view?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're not unsafe appliances, and I suppose that's to be emphasised. I mean, like, technology is quite good, but look, accidents happen and things do happen. Ideally, not put them on when you're asleep or when you're not in the house. If you can, put them on during the day. And look, we are trying to balance a cost of living crisis with trying to keep a home safe. Again, back to smoke alarms. If you do have a fire, if your smoke alarm is working and it's going to activate and let everybody know there's a fire, you can get out quickly. The thing that is coming to the fore, and unfortunately there have been instances of it around the country and around the world, of e-batteries in scooters and e-scooters and e-bicycles, and where they're charged. So we would always encourage people not to charge those in your hallways, in your escape routes, to always keep them into an enclosed room, so into a utility room, perhaps a kitchen or somewhere like that, so that if they ever did go on fire, they do produce a lot of smoke and a lot of gases and things like that. So you do want to keep that to a minimum, and you don't want to put those on your routes that you're going to be relying on to escape when your alarm goes off to alert you that there is a fire.
I've seen many, many pictures on social media of fire personnel saying, listen, this is what happened when a mobile phone charger was plugged in overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, they do, and they heat up, and things that we tend to find, and we've heard anecdotally, teenagers charging their phones under their pillows so that if the phone goes off at night, it'll vibrate and they won't miss anything. Again, a very dangerous practice, because, you know, they are electrical devices. They do heat up, so you want to keep them, you know, charged on a hard surface, so be that like a bedside locker or something like that. Ideally, when you're awake, again, not to do it at night. And also, you know, to use a proper charger, because you can get cheap Chinese imports that don't have the same electrical standards that we would expect to have in this country. And if you get cheap, you're running the risk of, you know, introducing that you know, a fire or a susceptible area into your home, which you don't want. You want to minimise, you know, all chances of fire starting in your home, and that's an easy way to minimise that, is to get rid of those kinds of things.
Now, we'll chat to you again closer to the time, but Halloween is on the way. Mm-hmm. You've got the bloody bangers are going off already, driving animals and everyone mad, and sometimes going off late at night. There are injuries every year where people lose fingers, and that's one danger aside from the inconvenience. There's the terror it causes to animals, and of course the whole issue for your personnel of bonfires and costumes being too close to candles, etc., etc. Your advice?
Yeah, look, again, it's similar to the cheap chargers. I mean, don't buy cheap costumes for children. If they're cheap, they're cheap because they're probably not made of the correct materials. I suppose irrespective of that, make sure that they are CE marked, but that, again, you're minding where your children are, that you're not letting them near candles. Like, try to avoid the use of candles at all. You can get LED ones or little battery-operated ones. Look the same, but just don't have that risk associated with them. And anywhere near a naked flame or bonfires that you have children beside, just to be extra vigilant of those. And if, God forbid, clothing did happen to catch fire, we have the stop, drop and roll. So basically they stop what they're doing, they drop to the ground and they roll around and try to extinguish the flames and minimise the damage to skin or whatever, you know. So look, they are risks, but like that, it's just a matter of taking a small step back and just assessing even your own home. You know, are you putting candles in an area where you may have children or flowing costumes and things like that? And if you are, get rid of them, replace them with the LED batteries.
And finally, a word on the bonfires.
Yeah, look, bonfires are legal, so we all know they happen. Like, ideally, if people can, you know, not give materials to children or teenagers or whatever to build them, try and reduce their instances in the first place. There will be organised ones around, and we'd encourage people to bring their children to those rather than trying to start their own ones. They can be lethal. You just don't know what's in them. You don't know what people have put into the centre of them, and then maybe, you know, stacked around the outside of quite innocuous things like maybe pallets or things like that. It creates hugely toxic gas. They're unstable when they start to burn, so they will start to fall. You can run the risk if there's someone putting aerosols or paint cans in that could explode. So There's just everything around them is awful. And then the damage that they do to the green areas as well, you know,
of course,
take about a year for them to recover. And then there's all those nasty things that have burned out that are going to stay on the grass. And that's not really a place where you want your children to be playing in the aftermath, you know. So
we'll come back to you closer to Halloween for further advice. But meanwhile, on this Fire Safety Week, if we all do one thing about it, that is, we do a scoping of the house to see that everything is safe around the rooms, that we follow Chanel's advice, close the room doors at night, check the smoke alarms that are working, and should there ever be a fire in your home, have a planned route of evacuating the house. Don't wait until it's on fire to discuss that plan. Discuss it now, that if that should happen. And as always, if ever you're in a smoke-filled house, it's a case of getting down low and out, Chanel, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, can give you a job, Clem.
No. I'd love to climb a ladder. Is Claire Germain still in the fire service tonight?
She is,
my good old friend. Give her my regards.
I will do.
I'll get Claire to throw me over her shoulder and bring me up a ladder.
No,
one
better
of these
woman.
Better woman indeed. Chanel, it's a very good talking to you, and it's a very, very important topic. The Senior Assistant Fire Officer with the Kildare Fire Service, Chanel Ryan. And we wish you and your colleagues the very best in the upcoming few weeks. And we'll have you back again closer to the Halloween period, Chanel. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thanks a million. Bye-bye.